Welcome to the Great Commission Today podcast, a podcast designed to help you and your church become more faithful, confident, and purposeful in obedience to the Great Commission. The Great Commission Today is sponsored by Five More Talents, an agency that offers holistic digital outreach solutions to help churches leverage technology wisely to invite more visitors, engage more members, and develop more leaders in this digital age.
All right. Well, Matt Schmidt, it's great to have you on the Great Commission Today podcast. How's it going today?
Going really well. Glad to be on here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you are someone that wears a number of different hats. You're a husband and father. You are, I believe, an elder in your local church.
Yep.
And you lead something called Engage 360 Ministries. Did I get that correct?
Yep.
And you and I have gotten to know each other over the, I guess, a couple of years now. Just in the pleasure of being co-exhibitors at the Lampstand Conference that Briarwood Presbyterian in Birmingham, Alabama does.
Yeah.
And so I love what you're doing at Engage 360 Ministries, and I'm excited to hear more about that today and how it can be beneficial to local churches as they seek to develop cultures of evangelism and evangelistic conversations. So
yeah, that's great.
Thanks for taking some time today. So just before we dive into just kind of the topic, which is really Engage 360 Ministries and what you all do, how you help local churches basically equip their people for, and of course you can clarify this as go, but
rethinking evangelism. Sure.
What's that?
It's almost rethinking evangelism.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just as you help local churches rethink evangelism so that, you know, my impression just from previous conversations is it's helping churches develop cultures of evangelism where people are equipped in their daily conversations to have those be conversations about the gospel, conversations about Jesus.
Yeah.
Just in the organic day-to-day
everyday conversation.
Yep. So it's a great topic. So just before we dive into the nitty-gritty of that, maybe you could take a few minutes to introduce yourself, a little bit about your family, your involvement in your local church, and then a little bit of the story of Engage 360 Ministries and how you started it.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you again for having me on, Daniel, and excited to be a part and to be able to help you guys and help serve the local church. As you said, I am a father, been married, just had my 19th wedding anniversary, and we have 6 children, currently 13 down to almost 3, turning 3 this summer, as our youngest, 5 girls and a boy. And so that's keeps us on our toes. My wife is all around talented in a variety of areas, homeschooling, minor homesteading-ish, you know, large garden, doing some foraging. I have various animals. So we do a little bit of that. So we really enjoy living on a small acreage outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, about an hour south. And part of how we ended up here, maybe fills in a bit of the story, is we moved from Nebraska, where we were both raised, born and raised, and we moved out here to go to seminary. I went to Southern Evangelical Seminary and did studies, master's in philosophy with studies in theology, Bible, and apologetics as well. And so that is really what drew us out here. Then just getting connected, getting plugged in to a local church and just serving there as a member, and then being asked to come on as an elder and serving in that role, teaching, guiding, Sunday school, sermons, kind of doing a mix of everything. We have a plurality elder model, so we balance that out between six of us currently. And so serve in various capacities through the church. But kind of my life's dedication became serving the broader church, I guess you'd say the universal church, through the work of Engage 360, which focuses on a really a practical conversational approach to evangelism and looking at how do we engage a majority of Christians into the practice of sharing their faith. And not having it be something that it's only for the experts or it's only for the uniquely gifted, but how can we teach every Christian to be more effective? We're not all going to be the same. And I would say that's probably the failure of many models that we're sort of solving for, at least what we're doing is an intentional different approach, is it's not dependent on personality or gifting. We're really trying to show people a biblical approach that can be applied in different ways by different people in different situations with different giftings, but all focused on a core that is the same, which is all around who is Jesus, why should we trust him, and what does it look like to be a disciple of his? So
That's
that's
great.
a pretty good nutshell, kind of where we've ended up. You can maybe get in more of the story as might be fitting. I came out of a practical atheism and to Christianity, kind of a unique path. And that's how I ended up eventually in seminary, focus on apologetics and philosophy. That's where that came from. But my passion really grew for a practical evangelism pretty early and more over time, and seeing that some of those other things are only useful in as much as they're being applied in discipleship and evangelism.
Yeah, and just a little bit more about kind of Engage 360. Good timing on holding up the mug right then. There we go. Engage three. There we go. Engage 360.
This is our first Corinthians 15 mug, our the gospel basics. I don't know how well it comes through,
Oh,
but
nice. Yeah, wonderful. And yeah, so just give me just a thumbnail sketch of how long has Engage 360 been around. You kind of started on this a little bit, but why did you start it? How did you start it? What are some of the iterations you've gone through since then? And kind of just a just kind of a
Overview.
brief, yeah.
Sure. So I think this is our seventh year in as existing as a ministry. It feels a lot less because of the COVID reset. We were almost one of the casualties of COVID, and all of the changes and restrictions that came into the world. We made it through, a little wounded, limping a little, but we made it through. And so we're almost in a second launch, I'd say, of our ministry the last 3 years. And so we started out, I had a background in campus ministry that I had gotten involved in while I was still in seminary. I had been asked to come on the national team with this campus ministry and was also on campus. Had been prior to that doing a lot of evangelistic outreach, incorporating college campuses, then ended up in college ministry, did that even more. And what happened over time is we started pulling just your average Christian in to do the outreach we were doing. It started as a Saturday. We'd go out on Saturday morning, sometimes with maybe quarterly, maybe a little more frequently at times with some of the students from the seminary. And we had some people from our churches ask if they could attend, and we said, sure. So we turned it into a mini training, and then we'd go out and we'd just have conversations. And we saw people go from never sharing their faith to starting to get involved a little bit in the conversation, to leading, and then being eager to do more. And the continual thing that shocked them was that we weren't using some script or we didn't have a set presentation. We just talked to people, and they had never really seen that before. And so we started to realize that there was something a little different about how we had ended up approaching evangelism. So when it came time to, well, when we had the opportunity, I would say, a handful of us to start a ministry, we knew while we loved campus and we love college students and it is such a great time, people are eager, interested in learning, more open to challenge, even if they're quite resistant in some ways, they're more open to discussion than we often find older adults. But we saw that it was too limited just serving the campus, and that what we really needed to do was teach the church to mobilize. And so, where there were opportunities for churches that were around college campuses, they have a great opportunity to be more intentional to get out on campus and to have the conversations. But we really wanted to focus on serving the local church and building up so that every Christian would be more capable of sharing their faith in everyday conversation. So, for us, an outreach event like we do on a college campus, it's not the thing. It's really more of a practice. It's more of the lab portion of the training where you can see what it looks like to take this different approach to evangelism, and seeing it done in conversation and really based on who the person is. But what all of that came out of was an in-depth study that we did of the book of Acts. To start our ministry at the very beginning, when a handful of us had come together with this idea, and I was kind of leading, I said, we knew that one of our convictions was what we were doing was not necessarily an innovation. We had seen glimpses of it in the Bible, but we really wanted to do an in-depth study. And so now a core part of our training is looking at a comparison and a contrast of Acts 2 and Acts 17, which is kind of the summarized, the briefest you can get of getting the picture of a biblical evangelism, because you have two very clear gospel opportunities to two very distinct audiences. And what you see is there's some similarities and then sort of some drastic differences. But the reason for those differences is because of what we did see throughout the book of Acts. And you can really even see this in the ministry of Jesus. How the person is sharing depends on who they are sharing with. And so this was what really grew in our conviction as a ministry, was that the starting point of a biblical evangelism is not me and what I know or what I like to share, but the other person, who they are, where they are spiritually, what's their experience with Christianity been? What do they even think Christianity is? Do they know anything about Jesus? Is everything they know about Jesus wrong? Because if I don't know that and I just start sharing about Jesus in the gospel, well, if they have a wrong Jesus in mind, then they might reject what I present because they're rejecting a wrong Jesus. And I'm okay with them rejecting a wrong Jesus. I want to show that real Jesus, point them to him, and it's him they have to agree or disagree with, not me. Or their past, their church upbringing, or their parents, or, ideally, yes, all those things align. And they were in a really healthy church with really clear biblical teaching and a clear presentation of the preeminence of Jesus and a clear presentation of the gospel, and godly leaders who, come before the people in repentance when they are in sin and all of that. But very few people have had that, unfortunately. And so, in our experience, what we had seen as a very consistent pattern is that almost everyone, I can't really think of a great exception, pretty much everyone I've met that was rejecting Christianity, what they were rejecting primarily or foundationally was something other than Jesus and the gospel. And Jesus was an add-on to whatever that foundational thing was. And I can usually agree to reject that other thing that they were building the everything upon that was their foundation. I can agree in rejecting that right along with them, but then I want to be ready to replace it with Jesus as that foundation, as that one true, sure foundation. And so that's what our ministry really exists to do, is to help the average Christian to learn how to have a spiritual conversation in everyday life, which means asking questions or listening for the right kinds of things that can prompt a spiritual conversation, and then knowing better how to guide it to find out where we can we agree with someone in what they might be rejecting or what they're looking for, but maybe not finding in the fullness that it needs to be, and then building from there on that common ground and shifting to present Christianity and the gospel and the clear Jesus and why they should follow and consider him. That's a pretty semi-condensed version of Engage
Yeah,
360.
well, that's great. That's really helpful, Matt. So, yeah, this really connects to one of the themes that comes up in the conversations, I have with my role at Five More Talents is, just asking churches, you know, how is your outreach going? How is your evangelism going? And so one of the things that I do often hear is that we kind of wish that, you know, more people in our congregation would be inviting their friends. I mean, we thankfully, and in many, if not most cases, you know, there's already some of that happening, but it's a really common thing I hear as I talk with pastors and church leaders in the meetings I do every week, you know, talking about their website and their online outreach. They're sure. often saying, you know, we see kind of a role for both the website and the online outreach, but also, you know, the personal invitations are, I think we all know, like, there's actually nothing more powerful than that, than those personal interactions. And so it sounds like Engage 360 is really designed to help, you know, the average Christian, help local churches, help local church leaders, grow and kind of disciple the people of their congregation in having those gospel conversations as the opportunity arises,
right,
in the course of daily life. And so I guess, how do you then begin to approach that, I guess I'm interested in a couple of things. One is, how do you approach that kind of for, like, just for an individual? And that's kind of maybe another question is how much of what you do is just for kind of an individual that wants to grow in evangelistic conversations versus how much of what Engage 360 does is actually putting together something for a, I guess, a local church and sort of equipping the body as a whole. So I guess there's probably a bunch of questions there, but that's what I'm wondering about.
So really, just to kind of begin with that endpoint, it can be both. And the challenge, I think, where we are currently culturally and why a lot of your traditional evangelism methods, some people say won't work. Some people are very committed because they've seen them work and they try it. And if you try it 1,000 times, you're going to get a few success stories. But the difference is that, you know, in the, say, the 60s, 70s, 80s, even, there was a generally Christian conscience in most of America, to where most people had some trending towards a kind of right idea of God, and they respected the Bible. They may not have known hardly at all what it said, but they respected it. And so all you needed to do with a majority of people at that point was explain what the Bible actually says. Because they weren't rejecting the Bible. They just didn't know. They were just ignorant or living their own way. And so there was a lot more conviction that would come because they accepted the Bible as an authority. This is kind of our Acts 2. You know, Peter appeals to the Old Testament prophecies and how Jesus was actually fulfilling things. We see this in other points in Acts, that they would often, when they're talking to Jews, just show how the authority, the scriptural authority you already accept, actually was pointing to this. And Jesus was fulfilling it. He wasn't denying it. He wasn't failing or falling short. He was fulfilling it in an even bigger way than we ever imagined. And so when you had a culture in America that was like that, you could be a little more focused on just clearly presenting the gospel using certain Bible passages. We've gotten past that. I'd say quite far past that now, at least in much of the country, to where we're moving into more of a post-Christian or even post-formal religious era. I do work in New England, and up there, you know, it's completely post-religious. Now, there's still worship. There are still idols, and there is still that spiritual element. And I'd say it's actually growing, but it's not organized. It's not formalized. And so we have to understand who our audience is, where we're starting. Now, I brought this up in context of your question, because even when it comes to thinking about inviting someone to church, part of that depends a little bit on where are they spiritually and how does our church conduct, say, a normal, if it's a normal Sunday service, how is that conducted? And there may be such a gap there that getting the average neighborhood, neighbor to come to sit through a whole church service could be very, very difficult. Not that it's bad or that it's wrong. In fact, I'm okay with a non-Christian not feeling fully comfortable in a church service. That if it's about equipping the saints, if it's about the unified worship of disciples of Christ coming together on the Lord's Day and doing the practices that are a part of that, I wouldn't be surprised that somebody who's not familiar with that feels a little awkward. And I think we make a mistake if we make church for non-Christians. But we also, as the people of God, as the followers of Christ, need to be welcoming to non-Christians. So how do we balance those? Well, it may mean that a church needs to figure out a process to shepherd someone to the point of even follow, really understanding why we're doing what we are in a church service or even inviting. It might mean needing to start something like an investigative Bible study in the neighborhood of a couple of people in the church, in neighborhoods near the church, as a starting point. Or it may mean building more of a relationship, as you said, individuals building a more of a personal relationship to where they understand where the person's coming from. They presented Christianity in some ways, brought some clarity where there might have been confusion, and just built that personal rapport to where it can overcome some of those challenges of someone sitting through an entire church service, maybe not fully knowing what's going on. And so I think it can be both a good thing that it might be uncomfortable for people where they are spiritually to sit through a church service, but also something we need to think about. Okay, well, how do we overcome that? And the answer is not to compromise and water down our church service. And so the training we're doing, and whether someone would use our training is really not the main point here. I hope there's some positive takeaways, whether anybody is interested in who we are ever again or not. But you need to understand that the average Christian sees evangelism as something that is for a unique gifting and personality, or maybe even a position in the church. And part of why they think that is because they think I could never do that. And what they're thinking is speaking up front on a Sunday, presenting, or street preaching, or maybe going door to door doing evangelism. They're not thinking about the conversations they're already having with their coworkers, with their neighbors, with their friends. Thinking of subculture evangelism, what subculture are they part of? Are they into pickleball or knitting or wood turning or whatever? They're not thinking, oh, I could intentionally have more conversations about Christianity in those places I already am. They're thinking about a special activity, a special event, or a special position. And so my challenge to churches would be whenever you're thinking of a programmatic element to evangelism, that should be viewed primarily as training and encouragement, not the thing. Now, of course, if we do an evangelism Saturday, we care about the people we're talking to. I hope to share and move them closer. Maybe we can talk about this in a minute, but thinking about a game of chutes and ladders, I want to move them closer to Christ through because of the conversation I have. But I'm viewing this largely as an opportunity to practice, to model for others and to get them engaged. We haven't done evangelism where we can check the box and now we're good until the next month. It's only training and practice and motivation for what should be happening then throughout our day-to-day life as God gives us opportunity. And so maybe that would be a key challenge I would give to churches is if you do programmatic stuff, don't think that you've done the evangelism now and it's done. Think of your programmatic elements as mobilizing people to do it in their everyday life.
Oh, that's really helpful. So I'm curious, kind of with the churches that you work with, or the people that you work with, what do you find kind of things that the churches are doing as far as evangelism or outreach in the community, and maybe what are some of the, I mean, is it often, I mean, do you often see a programmatic approach, or I'm just kind of curious, like what kinds of felt needs when people are coming to you and to Engage 360, what kind of gaps are they finding that kind of open the door to, you know, starting a conversation with you and looking at what Engage 360 has to offer?
In our experience, now it's still limited, we're still growing, we're pretty small, so, you know, a limited sample size. But what I've seen is a lot of the churches that still have a programmatic outreach, it's very limited in number. I would guess it's usually 1% or less of the church, often well under that. But they do it with consistency, and it's kind of, the church can say, we do an evangelism night. You know, we have a group of people go out every Wednesday. So we're doing it. But the consistent thing I've seen is that you have very similar personalities that are showing up to that. It's usually a very rigid format that they're following. And there's not a lot of assessment being done on what does success look like for every conversation. The success is being measured on, hey, we had somebody accept the gospel, but it's not, okay, but what happened to the other 20 people that didn't? Are they closer to God or are they further away? Do they understand Christianity better? Or are they just as confused as when they started? And so I see that still as a limitation in most of the programmatic type outreach that's being done, because you're just kind of getting, again, a very similar personality together. You're not usually mobilizing a large portion of the church. And I rarely see it being done in a way that's equipping people to now go do this in everyday life. Because the bottom line is, if you have some four-step gospel presentation that you're going and sharing, you know, you have an opening question and then you go right into your presentation, you're probably not even allowed to do that at work. You're not going to feel comfortable doing that with your neighbor who you see every day. And you're probably not going to want to ruin friendships. So you're unlikely to use that in your friendship conversations. And so that type of methodology just struggles to fit in anything other than a random stranger confrontational approach. But if that's all we have, well, we've limited it to the number of people who are comfortable randomly confronting a stranger, which is very, very low. I've done evangelism now for, you know, 16, 17 years pretty actively, in seasons and patterns, but pretty regularly. I'm still uncomfortable every time I do sort of an intentional confrontational approach. I'm not an evangelist by gifting at all. I love talking to people. I love talking about ideas. I love sharing about Jesus, but I'm very uncomfortable starting those conversations till it starts. So part of what we focus in training people on is thinking, what are some ways you can broach those conversations a little more naturally, or at least where you're not just jumping straight into a presentation? And so any way you can focus on understanding the other person better first. So two primary methods that we use, and we've done these with churches as well, and some of them are continuing to use this approach, but we use a whiteboard with a question, thought-provoking question. This works really well on college campuses. If you're a church near a college campus, you could do this every week and have nonstop conversations every time you go out. It can work in a busy downtown area if there's people who have enough time, like a weekend, say as like a green space kind of downtown, something where there's people around, there's a lot of traffic, but not everyone's in a huge rush. It can work there. And that question could be as direct as, you know, who is Jesus? And you kind of use Lewis's Lord, Liar, Lunatic, Legend, you know, come up with some way that will make sense in your context. But, you know, I think he's God. I think he's crazy. He's a fraud. Or I think he's a good moral teacher. And you just watch for someone to make eye contact with the board. You hold out the marker and you say, what do you think? And they put down their answer. And then you just say, oh, what makes you say that? And then you see where it goes. You see where God leads the conversation from there. But you're just largely asking questions for a while until you get to something where it's like, okay, hey, could I share something with you about that? Or where I can affirm, oh, I understand. I was in a similar situation. here's what I didn't understand at the time that I would hope I would have liked for someone to share with me when I was in that situation. So you can go wherever you want with those conversations, but it's pretty amazing how fruitful they can be. The other thing that we've done is a spiritual background survey. This can be really good for a church that's trying to get a lot more people mobilized. It's not easy, it's not comfortable, but it's at least a little bit less intimidating in that you have a clear few questions. Now, my personal conviction is we're only using surveys where the church is actually going to do something with the data, learn from it. I don't like it, and I've seen this done before. I don't like it if the survey is going to get thrown away the second we're done and we have 0 inches, what they say. It was just a way for us to feel more comfortable getting to our presentation. I don't like that personally. So others may disagree with me. They may think it's justified, but I just struggle with that. So we do we will do these spiritual background surveys, and I've done this with churches before as a kickoff, and then some of them have continued to do it. And it can start off as simple as saying, "Hey, my name is Matt. This is Daniel. We're with the local Presbyterian church downtown. You may have seen us before, but we have really come to the conviction that our city has changed a lot, and we haven't maybe kept up in understanding where people are spiritually and what their needs are. Would you take a few minutes to share some questions or answer some questions about your spiritual background to help us better understand people?" And we have questions on there that range from, and you can add or change or remove, but questions such as, did you have a spiritual background growing up? If so, what was it like? How would you describe it? What do you think of Christianity? If you changed, or would you currently consider yourself to be a spiritual person? And if so, why? And if there was a change, what caused the change? What do you think of Christianity, or describe it in your own words as best you understand it? Asking questions such as, has anybody ever sh shared reasons to know Christianity is true, or to wait, how you can know Christianity is true? Yes or no, and then answering that. And then from any of these questions, there can be opportunities to dive into deeper spiritual conversation, and often does. But we're asking questions that can help us learn about the context in which our church is operating now. We can see consistent patterns that are coming up. Maybe it's a common spiritual background that we're running into. Well, now we know we need to really take some time as a church to train everyone, because this is coming up on 30% of the surveys, and we wouldn't have even known this was a thing going on in our area. Maybe it's that a new religious movement has come in the area, or maybe it's because of immigration, there's a different spiritual background, or maybe you're finding out that you have a lot of people that grew up in a certain type of church environment, and they wouldn't consider themselves Christians anymore, but there's this consistent pattern of what they're coming from. Again, I can't tell you exactly, because it's going to vary based on where you are and your situation. But the beauty of doing the survey is that you're finding out, you're learning, and now we can be more intentional in our discipleship within the church, preparing people for the things they're more likely to face. But we're also having opportunities as we do those surveys to pray for people, to invite them to church, to invite them to, let's say, we're doing an investigative Bible study. I think those can pair really well. So we're going out, we're doing these surveys, and then to anyone who's open, you say, our church is going to conduct this open investigative Bible study. Would you be interested in being a part of that? It's meets on a different day. It's not a normal church service. We're meeting in this home or this community center near the church. And it's an opportunity for you to come and ask questions. There's no pressure. We're not expecting everyone to be a Christian that participates, but we just want people to have the opportunity to really see who Jesus is and understand him, perhaps for the first time, in an environment that's open to questions and inquiry. So you can do that together. So anyway, so those would just be some ideas. But it's gonna be what the church has to have some conviction behind it to really get numbers. If it's one person because it's their pet thing and they really want it, but the rest of the church isn't bought in, then it's probably not going to go very far. However, we will work with a church, a number of people of any size. And so sometimes it might be you've only got four people, but they're really convicted and they really want to start making a change and making an impact with the gospel. So then, hey, this is who we have. So let's start with these four, pour into them. And through them, over the next 5 to 10 years, we can make that circle much bigger. And so, you know, it's just going to vary by situation. And we work with, again, individuals, small groups within churches or whole churches. It's just going to depend on context. So.
Hey there, I'm Daniel Voss, co-founder and CEO of Five More Talents, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to the Great Commission Today podcast. I pray that each and every episode, including today's, blesses you and equips you and helps you to feel more confident, more purposeful, and to be more faithful in making disciples of all nations wherever the Lord has placed you. I also wanted to offer a special invitation to you if you're a church leader. If you're a church leader and you have the opportunity to use online outreach at your church and you're a decision maker in that role, and you sense that your church is just not grasping all the opportunities that you could to make more disciples and invite more visitors using the online media, then I'd love to talk with you. You can book a free 30-minute meeting with me called an outreach discovery call. In that meeting, we'll talk about what you've been doing and begin to explore some of the additional possibilities that are out there for you. So that sounds like that would be helpful to you. Just go to go.fivemoretalents.com and fill out the form there. Now back to the interview.
Yeah, so in all of this, you know, I'm just thinking of something I have heard on occasion, which is this is kind of going backing up on our conversation a little bit, Matt, which is kind of this idea of the, you know, the professional evangelist or the idea that evangelism is just you know, something that is you know, just confined to certain people. And you even said yourself, like, you don't consider yourself to be, you know, gifted as an evangelist per se. So I'm just curious, and maybe you can ideally point us to a, you know, a scripture or two, or maybe a theme of scripture or something. First of all, is that something you run into sometimes where you find either people in churches or churches that kind of have this, for whatever reason, this idea or this mindset that, and maybe with, you know, maybe with appropriate nuance, with some good reason of there's, you know, there is a, you know, I'm thinking of Ephesians 4, right? It does talk about there are different gifts or names, and one of them, if I remember correctly, is evangelist, if I'm not mistaken. Be misremembering there, but
4:11.
yeah, so I'm just kind of curious, what how do you help Christians and churches navigate that in terms of is evangelism the province of just some
Sure,
select
sure.
few, versus basically what you're saying here is, to some extent, this is a duty and a privilege for all of us as believers. So.
So our conviction would be that just as all of those gifts listed in Ephesians 4 is that the evangelist, their role is for the building up of the church. Now that could mean, okay, we're going and we're bringing others into the church, but one of our core convictions would be that actually a key thing for the evangelist is equipping others to do the work of evangelism. They might have a unique gifting, a unique personality that makes it easier for them. But if they're just going and doing it on their own, I'd say they're falling short of what the Bible is calling that role to in the church. However, the challenge becomes usually your unique personality that comes with the evangelist gifting doesn't transfer very well to others. And so what we find often is the evangelist does what works for them because of their unique gifting and personality. And then they just try to teach everyone else to do it as well. And it doesn't work very well. So you end up with, 1 to 3% of the church engaged because they're at least maybe hyper extroverts and comfortable, your sales personality or something like that, where they can at least mimic that enough that they're willing to go give it a try. And there is something about the spiritual gift of evangelist. I don't know how exactly it works, but I had a friend early on when we were starting the ministry who I would say, and he would agree, was gifted as an evangelist. And it's amazing how two things. One, when we would do outreach, if there were two or three people wherever we were that were, a 9.5 out of 10 on the scale of, 10 accepting Jesus, following Jesus as Lord, accepting or becoming a disciple of Jesus, they would find him with like almost no exception. And he would, 10 minutes, and man, this person, they were already praying. They'd actually been asking God, to try to understand. And they saw I was by the sign, and they thought that it was something Christian, and there we go. And so they find that. And when I am out there with him, the odds of me finding the person who has, 100 questions about Christianity, is kind of strongly skeptical, more atheist, whatever, they find me with abnormal amount. But that's my background and that's my story. And I can really meet those people and shepherd them through closer to Christ. And so it's amazing how God works like that. But the evangelist can also say and do things that I think if I said and did, I might get punched. And so they have a way of being so much more direct and received well. And I don't think you can just learn that. It's something deeper than a practiced skill, I think. And so the challenge is that most of the evangelists don't realize how much their unique gifting and personality allows them to do things in a certain way with success rates that the rest of us would probably not have. And so they end up taking their approach that works for them to the church, and then it doesn't really multiply very well. So our focus as a ministry is saying, okay, how do we be intentional to make everyone a better version of themselves? Because I recognize I have unique gifts and I do have a unique personality. I'm not an evangelist by gifting, but I do have some unique things that are not as common in the church. And so if I just tried to make everyone a mini version of me, it wouldn't work any better than the evangelist trying to get everyone to be a little mini version of himself. So what we're thinking is, how do we equip everyone to be a better version of who they are? How does the evangelist use the gifts and opportunities and training and experience they have to make everyone else in the church better? But that means they're going to have to be very intentional in how they compensate for the difference in personality and gifting. And very rarely do I see that being done in either the worlds of evangelism or another world that I came out of in apologetics, where you have a very analytical mindset, again, uniquely gifted people, and they struggle to adapt to the realities of the rest of the people in the church. So I'm not saying we've solved for it and we have just the magic bullet and it's really easy, but we at least know that's the problem we have to solve for. And so we're at least solving for the right problem of how do we use these gifts, this training, this experience to help everyone be a better version of who they are. And really giving people the confidence to see, yes, sometimes God is going to use you in spite of who you are. And he's going to use you beyond your capacity or beyond your natural ability. But more often, and especially when you make yourself available, God can use you specifically because of who you are. And so there are people that the quiet introvert that comes from a certain background is very well suited to reach that I would actually have a harder time because I'm not that. And so really seeing how that evangelist gifting can be used to build up everyone in the church for the purpose of evangelism. And that's at least how they're going to thrive the most in the role that they have, the gift that they have. I'm not saying they can't do evangelism on their own as well, but we're just falling very, very short of the potential if the evangelist is just going and doing evangelism. They're pretty much on their own, or they got a couple of other people, and the rest of the church is checked out, and we think we've got it done. I would say that's falling far short of what God would desire of us. So
that's really helpful, Matt. So as we begin to wrap up our conversation for today, I think you've kind of brought us to the point where what I want to ask next is, what does that curriculum look like? What are maybe some different ways that curriculum looks like that Engage 360 provides, or that you're finding is helpful for believers and for church leaders that want to equip their people in this way of becoming as the unique individuals that God has made them to be, actually becoming more mature in Christ and being able to use our words to help point others to Christ, and ultimately, to the gospel and to his bride, the Christ's bride, the church. What are some elements of that curriculum? What kind of things could people expect if they if they're hearing this and they're like and they're starting to get curious about what Engage 360 does specifically?
Well, my encouragement would be the same whether they're using our curriculum or not. But it's starting with basics, getting clear on terms like what is faith, what is hope, what is love, what is the gospel, because there's a lot of confusion even within the church around those terms, and there's even more outside of the church. And so one of the things we talk about is that our responsibility is not to say the gospel, but to communicate the gospel. But communication involves me understanding at least as best I can. And it's not going to be perfect ever. Any of us who are married will already know that. But you need to be trying to think about what is this other person hearing? Because I can quote verses that technically say the gospel, but if I'm using terminology that the person I'm talking to has no idea what it is, or maybe worse, they think they know and they have a wrong understanding, then I'm not accurately communicating the gospel, even if I'm accurately saying the gospel. And so getting clear on those foundational terms is really important. That's helpful for everyone, no matter your gifting, personality, experience. Then looking at a biblical approach to evangelism, really helping people to see, we've started calling it a biblical evangelism reset, seeing that a real biblical evangelism starts understanding the person you're talking to as the primary thing that's essential to the conversation. Now, yes, we have to have a clear gospel. We have to understand Jesus. We use 1 Corinthians 15 and the gospel as Paul presents it there is something everyone needs to have clear in their mind. That's what was on the mug that I held up on the other side of the mug. But understanding that I need to understand where this person is spiritually, what they understand about Christianity, at least somewhat, to know how to present Christianity to them. We also train in, we've come up with an acronym that summarizes this biblical evangelism. We forced it into saying gospel. So G, gauging your audience. O, offering common ground. S, shifting to Christianity and the gospel. P, providing evidence, and that evidence being unique to that person, something that will be meaningful or the things that will be meaningful to that person, because it's going to vary based on who they are, their personality, their background. Then E, explaining the gospel. And this is also factoring that in. So overcoming the particular challenges or confusions of that person to understanding the gospel. And then L, leaving with a clear next step. Now, that's the step that the evangelists are so good at that the rest of us struggle immensely. But especially if the only clear next step was always, okay, do you want to pray and receive Christ? Well, that's even more uncomfortable for us to say. But I would challenge even the evangelists and say, that's not even always logically what makes sense to ask of someone. Yes, I understand tomorrow's not guaranteed, right? And there is an urgency. But I trust God and the sovereignty of God that he's pursuing them. If I've just, for the first time, this person has considered maybe there is a God and they've never read the Gospels, they don't know anything about Jesus, but our conversation time is over, I don't think the answer is, okay, well, do you want to pray and receive Christ before I go here? It might be saying instead, thinking intentionally, where have we covered in this conversation? What would be a next step? And so saying, you know, hey, I can tell you're really thinking through these things and maybe you haven't before. And we got to talking a little bit about why Jesus is such a big deal, but you said you've never really understood, you've never read the Bible or anything like that. If I gave you this Bible and I marked a set of pages that are Jesus's life and his teaching, would you commit to going home and reading them? Now, I've given them an opportunity to say, yes, I'm going to see if there's anything to this, or no, I refuse to. But I haven't asked, I've asked a question that makes sense based on where we are in the conversation, based on where I know they are spiritually. And yet it's a step to move forward and then trusting God with that. Now, I'd love to have the opportunity to follow up with that person. I'd love to get their information and say, hey, why don't you read this? And then let's get together. I'll buy you lunch next week and we can talk about what you read. Maybe it's even a book that's further back. Maybe it's a book about, you know, arguments for the existence of God, because I'm talking to someone who's that far, and just saying, but it's what's the process to give them an opportunity to move forward, and how can I make myself available to be a part of that in as much as they want that going forward? And so that's the gospel acronym. And then we also cover very basically how we can know Christianity is true, really looking at that Christianity is an objective thing. It's a historical claim. Paul makes this clear in 1 Corinthians 15. If Christ was not raised from the dead, then we of all men are to be most pitied. The whole thing anchors on the public teaching of Jesus, the public miracles of Jesus, the public death of Jesus, and the public resurrection of Jesus. This is not a private faith. It is not a merely personal, emotional, intra-spiritual thing. It is something in objective time and space and history. Now, it's more than that, but it's not less than that. And I fear we've went so far that we've made it less than that nowadays. And so, you know, being clear on how I can say with conviction to somebody, I know Christianity is true. And I don't mean it personally works for me, or I get a really strong feeling in my chest when I think about it. But no, there are real things that happened in time and space and history, whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, whether I want to follow Jesus every day or not, it's true. And it's objective, and it's for all of us to have equal access to. And it really follows the pattern of God throughout the story that he gives us in the Bible. He does acts in external observable reality that are the basis upon which we can trust that what follows is truly the words of God. So whether you think of Moses and the burning bush, or the staff that he throws down and turns to a snake, or the plagues of Egypt, the sacrifice of Elijah being accepted, you know, even though it was soaked and drenched, and it instantly being taken up, time and time again, God is showing in these ways, doing miracles in the natural world that everyone can observe. Now, everyone doesn't follow just because of that, but it's there for everyone to access. It's not, you just have to believe us. You just have to take my word for it. You know, the people didn't have to just take Moses' word for it. God gave him a sign so they could know, okay, this guy really does speak for God. And in the same way, Jesus did these miracles demonstrating his authority. And really what faith is recognizing the authority of Jesus and then trusting what he says is true and believing those things because of it, and recognizing he is the rightful king, he is the rightful ruler, and submitting to his rule and living in obedience. You know, Jesus says, if you love me, obey my commands. But we're doing that because he's given us a basis on which we can know that it's reasonable to do. So faith is more than reason, but it's not less. It's an extension of reason. So that's what we cover. And kind of a big shift for us this year has been recognizing when we've just done events in person, it's very hard to know what's happening after. We have often end up disconnected from the church. It's hard to have momentum. So what we've been building out over the last several months is an online community where the church as a whole or individuals, we can make private areas for a whole church if they want, if there's not much buy-in. But that we can have ongoing discussion. We have ongoing training. We put a topic post up every week of something we find online. And we have a interaction around how might we interact with this person? What questions might we want to ask to learn where they're coming from? What could we see in what they're saying that we know is wrong? And how would we present in a conversational way approaching that? And so we'll do that through comments and chat. But then we'll also usually do on a Friday afternoon, we'll do a live time and discuss that. So there's ongoing different things. We're going to do a book study over the summer through a book called Happy Lies that gets into the New Thought movement. So we're always thinking about ways we can be active partners to the church, to the individuals, and really finding a way we can provide that ongoing mentoring. That's the same thing that needs to be happening in the church. Those gifted people, those people that have been tasked with the responsibility, being a discipleship pastor, being an evangelism pastor, or having those gifts, then how do they put something in place where there's initial training, there's clear paths, and then there's ongoing opportunity for growth? And if you put all those things together, I think you can see a change. It may take time, but you can see that change come.
Well, Matt, I think feel like we're just getting started, but we need to wrap it up for today, unfortunately.
Understood.
But this is wonderful. Really appreciate you and your ministry with Engage 360. And how can people find out more about Engage 360 if their interest has been stimulated here through this conversation?
Sure. Easy way, our website, which is www.e360m.org. So E as in engage, and then 360, M as in ministry, e360m.org. I can share that link. I could even share some of those, some downloads, some things that kind of talk about a little bit of what we discussed today, the gospel acronym, some things like that, if that's helpful to share with your audience. But they can find us on there, and then you can find out how to join our online community from the website. And so we would be happy to have you on there.
Very good. Well, Matt, thank you so much for having this conversation today and for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Great Commission Today podcast. If this has been helpful to you, please subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a review.
He is given to me. Jesus came and said, just before he went to heaven, he commanded them, go therefore and make disciples, teaching them to do what I've told you. He said, go therefore and make disciples, and when it's all complete,